pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Irene, would you call the roll for us, please?
Mr. Smith.
Here.
Mrs. Lucas is excused. Mr. Dolny.
Here.
Mr. Jones.
Here.
Mr. Scully is excused. Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mr. Lenhertz is excused. Mr. Freeman.
Here.
Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
Excellent. Thank you very much. First order of business would be the approval of the minutes from our meeting of December the 21st. Do any of the members of the board have any additions or corrections to the minutes? If not, I'd like a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Great. Thank you very much. Item number two in this evening's agenda is a comprehensive plan amendment for 145 plus or minus acres parcel from Greenbelt Industrial and Conservation Residential Industrial Conservation, along with a policy to limit development on subject parcel to 348 dwellings and 350,000 square feet of non-residential. Mr. Tyner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Just one second. We're going to hear this one presentation for both agenda items. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we will. I think at your last meeting, we did the same thing. We did, Jose presented one presentation, and then you would take separate action, both of the items. But first, I'm going to try to just give a brief history of this project. I have some notes on, you know, this future land use map amendment and the rezoning application first came to the city Palm Coast back in June of last year. And what the developer was proposing is what we call a straight zoning modification of changing the zoning in the future land use map. One of the things that our land development code requires is a neighborhood meeting, because that's exactly what we want. We want the applicant to go out into the community and to have a neighborhood meeting to present the project prior to the planning board listening to the item and listening to the facts. And they did that back in August. They had their first neighborhood meeting. They had approximately between 40 and 50 residents in attendance. And of course, you know, during that first meeting, they came into a lot of opposition. They approached city staff, and because we were kind of encouraging more of a straight zoning rather than going to a master plan development agreement, which they proposed. But after listening to the neighbors and listening to a lot of concerns, we thought it best suited that instead of going into a straight zoning application, that they actually, you know, withdraw the straight zoning application and go into a master plan development. That way, you know, what's different between the straight zoning and the master plan development is that they could try to their best ability of addressing as many as the concerns with the citizens that would be documented, that would be part of the development agreement, part of the approval that they would have to comply with. So that's why the applicant wanted to change the application to a master plan development. And then after that, of course, they went back and they started what they call, I think, an advisory committee and met with some neighbors, representation of the neighborhood, and went back and had, I think, four different meetings to discuss the project and to discuss what they can do to help alleviate some of their concerns. They went back and revised the plan August 26th. I think they had an advisory team, their first meeting, to discuss the concerns and try to narrow them as much as possible. And then December 12th, after a meeting, then December 12th of last year, they had their second neighborhood meeting with about 50, between 50 and 70 people in attendance to try to alleviate some of their concerns. And some of the concerns, I think, as you heard at the last meeting, but was, of course, the density. And, you know, as you know, the developer proposed about 500 units, and then as part of the development agreement, reduced that to 384. They eliminated the paddy home lots. They moved a lot of the big concerns were buffers from the zoning district. They are having a 100-foot buffer around the perimeter of the neighborhood, and approximately 420 feet from the property line to the multifamily building. So they try to accommodate for some larger buffers. They came to the planning board for the public hearing on December 21st and then proposed that to you and then heard from the residents again and wanted to make a recommendation to continue the item to try to go back to try to, be a good neighbor and try to further make some changes to the agreement. For example, the revised MPD now that staff received incorporated the CBTED strategies, having an on-site property management, discounts and rent for law enforcement officers, no individual room rental. So this was after, the last meeting that they went back and changed some of the agreement. And, staff, and you'll hear from Jose, I know I'm talking a little bit longer, and Jose will provide the technical information on our staff report. And you know that we comply with our comprehensive plan and our land development code, and we do the analysis based on the comprehensive plan and our land development code. And our staff recommendation is for approval for the future land use map, the comprehensive plan, and the rezoning to MPD. You know, this property, what's different about this property, and one of the reasons why we're making a recommendation for approval is, the location. There's some areas in the city that have multifamily zoning that's really, in our staff's opinion, very inappropriate to have multifamily zoning. And that's when you're right in the middle of a neighborhood where there is no ability to have a buffer, where when you get out your backyard of your house, you can actually see, a condo unit. And additional, on residential roads, it makes it real tough to have some condos when you're in the middle of a neighborhood and residential area. So there are areas in the city that we are actually promoting to go from multifamily to residential. This location is quite a bit different. You've got a major corridor of US 1 that's on road frontage. You have enough property to provide a lot of the buffers that we would require in the land development code to be a good neighbor. And I think the developer tried very hard to work with the neighborhood to try to resolve some of those issues. And this is still, the first step in the process after the comp plan. If the comp plan is approved and the rezoning is approved, then you still have the platting and make sure those other technical requirements are maintained, when it comes to, more transportation analysis and some of those details, the engineering work to make sure there's no off-site flooding, all those technical requirements be done. But anyway, with that said, I do want to let Jose provide his presentation. And, Mr. Chairman, again, one presentation, and then you can take, comments, and then but we'll have to act on each application separately.
Jose, before you start, ladies and gentlemen, just for those of you who weren't here last time, the way this process works is the staff gives us a presentation of the submission by the developer. The developer, if they choose, may give us a presentation as well. The discussion is then open to the board members to ask any questions they may have of either the staff or the developer. The next step would be the public hearing portion of the hearing, which was, will give you each and every one of you an opportunity to come to this podium, state your name and address, and take your 3 minutes to explain to us your position on the matter, at which point the matter will come back to the board for further discussion. Other questions might be answered that were brought up during the public hearing portion of it, and then the action will take place. We'll either approve or disapprove. When we approve or disapprove, all we're doing is making a recommendation to the city council. This development project, whether we approve it and recommend it or not, will go to the city council at their next city council meeting. So you have an opportunity to discuss this with us tonight, and if you're not satisfied with our action tonight, and frankly I don't know which way it will go, you also have an opportunity to go to the city council meeting and have the same conversation with the city council members. Okay, Jose, I'm sorry.
It's okay. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Jose Papa with the community.
Jose, I'm sorry. Was this advertised for the next city council, or do you still have to advertise for it?
No, we haven't advertised for city council yet.
Okay.
So,
Katie, we just want to make that clarification, that there would be advertising when it moves forward.
Yep. Quick question.
I'm sorry, we're not going to take questions, ma'am. You'll be more than happy to ask a question. I'm sorry, we'll be here all night if we do that.
Okay.
When we have the public portion of the meeting, you're more than happy to come to the podium and ask any question you'd like to ask. Go ahead, Jose.
So, good evening again. Again, Jose Papa with the Community Development Department. And again, this presentation is for an approximately 145-acre parcel. Adjacent to US 1 and just south of Belterre Boulevard. The application, again, there are two of them that will be presented before you, and one is for the comprehensive plan amendment, followed by a zoning map amendment. Under the current comprehensive plan designation, which is shown here on the left, what you have is some industrial areas adjacent to US 1, with the bulk of the property towards the east being designated Greenbelt. The application from the applicant is to essentially consolidate the industrial areas in the front to provide a more continuous area for development and to change the Greenbelt areas to residential, as shown in yellow here. There is a 13-acre conservation parcel through the middle of the Greenbelt area. And what's being proposed is to keep this, 13 acres of conservation areas, but the new delineation of the conservation areas more closely reflects the environmental conditions that are found on the site. So in essence, a summary of the proposal is that it's currently 43 acres of industrial, 90 acres of greenbelt, 13 acres of conservation, being changed to 52 acres of industrial, 81 acres of residential, and again, keeping the 13 acres of conservation. The big caveat to this application is that the amendment, the proposed comprehensive plan amendment, includes a footnote on the flume that would limit the residential uses to 348 units and the non-residential use to 350,000 square feet, which plays a big role in how the public facilities impact analysis is conducted. Again, the public facilities impact is based on maximum development potential as required by the state when you do a comprehensive plan amendment. As previously stated, the current designation includes a green belt, which has really a maximum floor area ratio of 0.30. That is, you can develop up to 30% of that site for, in this case, public or semi-public uses, and those include things like hospitals, schools, or houses of worship. And so based on that 90 acres with a 0.3 FAR, you have about 1.1 million square feet of potential development. And the same thing with the industrial, which allows an FAR, or about half of the area, to be developed for commercial. And in this case, you would look at the worst case, or the maximum development potential, which could be a shopping center. So at 43 acres and the 0.50 FAR, that's about 945,000 square feet of non-residential use. So again, that under the proposed designation, the footnote would limit the development of that site to 348 dwelling units and 350,000 square feet of non-residential. And so based on that, we do a public facilities impact analysis, again, using the maximum development potential. And what you would see from basically from the analysis is that due to those limitations that are placed on the site, there would be a reduction in the demand for on the roadways, transportation, potable water, and sewer. The increase comes where if you are to do the residential development, then you have a an increase in the solid waste capacity, a demand on parks of an additional 5 acres, and in terms of its demand on schools, you would have 86 additional students that you would have to accommodate in your schools. So again, to summarize the public facilities impact analysis, again, net result of a proposed amendment, which would include the limiting policy in the analysis, a decrease in PM peak hour daily trips, decrease in water and sewer demand, and increase in demand on parks and school capacity. But of course, these facilities, I mean, this is not the end. Again, this analysis is done almost at the 35,000-foot level. Again, just takes into assumption the maximum development potential. If this application moves forward, then those facilities will be further reviewed at the ground level. I mean, we might know that it might not have a increase in water or sewer demand, but then you have to look at the size of the pipes and those things. And that comes at a much later level if the application is to move forward. Looking at the environmental factors, there are a few things that are highlighted in the review of the environmental factors in this area. One, it's not in a special flood hazard area. Two, it continues to preserve the 13-acre conservation area. The site is fragmented from a larger corridor by US 1 and, again, the existing residential land uses. It's not within an aquifer recharge areas, and there are no impacts on any archaeological or historical resources. And again, looking at the consistency with the surrounding land uses, I think it's just important to look at the proposed changes to residential, which is consistent with the land uses that you see to the north and to the east, and the industrial areas that are being proposed along US 1 on the west side of this parcel is certainly consistent with the industrial uses that are found along US 1 to the east, to the west of that property. So looking at consistency with a comprehensive plan, again, there's the availability of infrastructure adjacent to the property. The location of the commercial non-residential development is appropriate along US 1. Yeah, again, it promotes a land use pattern that does not increase the cost of providing utilities. Again, it's proximity to those infrastructure. And again, improving the balance of land uses, providing a mix of residential and non-residential in this case. The findings would be that there is no significant impact on the level of service public infrastructure, no significant impact on environmental factors. It is consistent with surrounding land uses and consistent with policies found in the comprehensive plan. So at this time, staff is recommending that the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board recommend to the City Council to transmit the Comprehensive Plan Amendment to the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity for State Review. And again, that's just to highlight that this Comprehensive Plan Amendment, if it's approved by City Council at first reading, would be sent to the state for further review by the State Planning Agency, as well as other agencies of the state, including the Department of Transportation, the Water Management District, and the Department of Environmental Protection. So it does get a full state review also. Again, so next steps, I think I just sort of highlighted that very briefly. The second part of this application is the proposed zoning map amendment. Again, what you find along US 1 is a mix of COM3, high-intensity commercial uses, and Industrial 1, our light industrial uses, as represented in pink. And with the rear of the property being designated as Estate 1. Estate 1 is a residential zoning district which limits development to one unit per acre. The proposed zoning designation is that master plan development, and with every master plan development zoning designation, you do have that development agreement which specifies the development limits and development standards that are to be established on this property. A summary of the master plan development is as follows. It will be limited to 348 dwelling units, in this case multifamily dwelling units. It'll be limited to 350,000 square feet of general commercial use, and those are typically your retail uses and your office uses. So it eliminates the ability to have any light industrial uses on it at this point. The proposal includes that there will be a mix of two- and three-story buildings, with those heights being set at 24 feet for two-story buildings and 36 feet for three-story buildings. Under the proposed development agreement, the multifamily building will be at least 424 feet from the eastern property line and 420 feet from the north property line. That parcel is only accessible by US-1, and that the developer proposed to include a bike ped system to connect the commercial and the residential uses within this parcel. Since subsequent to the December meeting, the applicant has provided some additional conditions that would be added to the development agreement, and that one includes the incorporation of the SEPTED strategies, and those are mainly design features such as appropriate lighting and landscaping to help deter any crime on site. Proposal to provide rental rates, discount on rental rates for members of local fire departments and law enforcement agencies, on-site property management, rental of entire units, no rental of individual rooms, and the last one there is to increase the minimum dwelling unit size from 650 to 750 square feet. So looking at a comparison with the development standards, and this is for the non-residential uses, what you basically see is that the proposed MPD maintains development standards that are consistent with the existing standards that are there now in terms of floor area ratio, the impervious area, the maximum building heights, including in the setbacks. The same comparison for residential uses. Again, there is an increase here in the maximum density that would be permitted on the property from one unit per acre to an approximately 4.3 units per acre. Your maximum building height essentially remains the same, 35 feet maximum height in Estate 1, 36 feet in MPD. There's a decrease in the maximum impervious area, whereas from 0.5 to 0.7, and again, and some slight decreases in the required setbacks. And again, this is just the proposed master plan, conceptual master plan development that's to go along with the development. Again, just looking at it and in terms of its the surrounding uses, again, the proposed general commercial uses provides a good buffer and is consistent with the industrial uses to the west. And again, that buffer provides, the general commercial use along US-1 will provide a good buffer to the residential areas to the west, to the east, and to the north. And again, mainly the provided buffering area between the existing residential uses and the multifamily development that's proposed on site. Again, looking, reviewing the proposed rezoning for consistency with a comprehensive plan. There's one policy in the comprehensive plan that establishes the criteria for where multifamily zoning areas are appropriate. The policy basically states that it's appropriate to be located at major arterials, and in this case, the site is along US 1. The site should have at least 15 acres of contiguous uplands, and in this case, it does. There should be the availability of central water and wastewater facilities in proximity of the site, and that's present. There is adequate land area to provide either a wide landscaped or natural buffer from the proximate single-family residential uses. And again, this site and the proposed conceptual master plan has shown that consistency and that it can meet the architectural design guidelines provided in the land development code. And this development will have to meet those architectural design guidelines in the land development code. It's also consistent with other policies in the comprehensive plan, such as its is it compact and contiguous development for efficient provision of maintenance of infrastructure. Again, the subject property is proximate to available infrastructure. You might need to extend water lines and sewer lines, and that review will come at a later period in the development if approved. There are policies in the comprehensive plan that calls for the supply of land to be developed for residential uses to provide that variety in housing types. And again, the zoning change will allow that opportunity to provide that variety of housing type. And this change does not cause a financial liability or hardship on the city. Again, the site is proximate to the existing water and wastewater lines. And under the proposed development, the existing capacity for water and sewer treatment is available to accommodate the change. And its impact upon environmental natural resources. Again, the initial analysis has shown that there is not a significant impact on the environmental natural resources. But as if should this project or should this application move forward, there will be additional review and to permit and permits required that would require additional review of the environmental resources along the site. Looking at the criteria for a zoning change, is there no threat to general health, safety, and welfare of the community? Does it comply with other local, state, or federal regulations? Again, showing that the change has a potential, the potential uses are compatible with the surrounding uses, and again, will be subject to further development review should the application be approved. Is it compatible with surrounding land uses? Again, the potential uses are compatible with uses in the surrounding area, but it does that buffer and the architectural considerations need to be really considered and pay close attention to in order to maintain that compatibility. And does it accomplish a legitimate public purpose? The proposal to include a commercial area, retail of office along a major arterial, again, serves to provide some services to the south end of the community. And again, it meets the comprehensive plan requirement or comprehensive plan policy to look for opportunities to diversify the housing stock in the city. So based on those findings, staff is at this time is recommending that the Planning and Land Development Regulation Board recommend that the City Council approve the proposed zoning map amendment from Estate 1, Light Industrial District, and High Intensity Commercial to the Master Plan Development. And just to let you know the next steps, that if this, no matter what the board recommends, again, it will go to City Council for two public hearings, contiguous or simultaneously with the Comprehensive Plan Amendment. And again, if it's approved at two readings, or it's approved if it's approved by City Council, there are those other additional development review standards that will have to be met by this project, ranging from a subdivision master plan, preliminary plat, or to a final plat or site plan.
Before we do questions, I want to ask if the developer would like to make a presentation.
Yes, please. Yep.
Thank you. Please come to the podium if you don't mind.
Sure.
Was it?
Yes.
Was it? You're going to have to wait for the refinement. Let's go. Stay there. Thank you, thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. Thank you for hearing me. Thank you, everyone in the back, for coming. Appreciate your interest in the community. I want to thank the advisory board for taking part and giving us guidance. And truthfully, you know, contrary to what you may hear from me, from some of our friends and the neighbors, I really do care about this community. I really do care about the project that we're doing, which is why I've taken my time, and I've met with them multiple times to try to learn and hear and listen and incorporate what I thought was feasibly doable within the community. So, which leads me to why we're here tonight is because, you know, last time I heard some things that really weren't consistent, or maybe it was an oversight on our part, really weren't consistent with what I was intending to do, and I wanted to go back and talk with them again and clarify it. And actually, at the time, they invited you guys to come to their house, and I don't know if you took up on the offer, but I took them up on the offer, and they were very kind, and they brought me in, and we had some food, and we sat around and talked. But nonetheless, I want to emphasize the fact that I really do want this to be work within the community, and it doesn't stop here. You know, if this does go forward, I encourage the community to be involved, and we'll listen to their opinions on the way this develops. So, with that said, I wanted to address some of the further refinements that we made. One of the things that I heard was 650 square foot, and somebody likened it to a garage, or you guys are putting garages in there. How can you have that? And I'm like, well, I don't remember that. But it turns out we just went and we grabbed what was in the code, the minimum in the code to put in there. And doing a little research online, it turns out that 650 is the average apartment in the United States. But in the interest of trying to make it right, I would agree with them. 650 is kind of small, so we're going to increase that square footage for the MPD to 750. We want it to be comfortable. We want it to be right. This is a high-end multifamily unit. This is not something that would warrant smaller units. So with that, we also did further natural buffers along the edge. I noticed some areas that I thought might allow for some visibility through there, and one of the things I committed to doing was to try to minimize the visibility from their backyards and neighborhoods, so I want to make sure that I keep up with that commitment. So I made sure that some buffer trees were within the range, and I went out and took some pictures, which I'll share with you after, of what the distance is and how it would play out, which we, you know, one of the troubles with going second is these guys stole my thunder. Ray did a great job of giving the history of it, and we really did spend a lot of time and move forward slowly to make sure we were right. And Jose did a great job of putting together all the stuff what we did in our comparisons. So we talked about these already. I won't really go into it. The only thing I want to hit is the very last one, the language about government subsidized rental. I stand behind that. I've said it up here before that we will not allow or accept government subsidized housing in this facility. Won't happen. The best we can do is put it in the homeowners association docs, and that's what we commit to do. And we, while I'm still around to do it, who knows what happens in the future? I could, my car could break down on the way home, and who knows? But I'll commit to not allowing any government subsidized housing. This is not what I envision. This is not what I'm building. This is not what I want. This is not what the community has expressed to me that they want. So it won't be allowed. So, again, it wouldn't be, we weren't able to put it in the MPD, but we did want to address it and make sure you guys know we hear you, and we want to follow through with that. I need to go forward with these slides. So one of the things I did just for grins for me, I wanted to see what it really was when I said 400 feet. So, yes. Yeah, so I went out there with my kids, and we got up on a 12-foot ladder, and I said, boys, take some pictures. So we measured out 60 foot. So here's 60 foot from the property line. Right, and looking in, and you can see, I can see on the left, I can see someone's back patio. That's 60 feet up there. Okay, so we can see it. 60 feet, you're definitely going to see. And we go to 100 feet, a little bit further back. It's a little bit more denser, and I can still make out something up on the top corner there. There's some residents, and I'm sure those residents would be able to see the buildings. Keep going back 200 feet, start to be a little bit more dense. And this is all in a straight line, by the way. Start to be a little bit more dense, and while you can barely make out some of the residents back there, you can still, I think you can still see it in all fairness. But when you go to 400 feet, which is what we projected, you can't see anything. It's completely obscured. So one of my commitments to the people was to minimize the availability to see these buildings. and their pleasure in their sitting in their backyard. They don't want to see these big, tall buildings. So I pulled them all together, pushed them as far away, and the closest building you're going to see is a two-story one. It's 424 foot away from the property line. So with that, I just want to say thank you all for hearing me, and at the end, if we have the opportunity to possibly rebut some of the things that may be brought out that we didn't think was quite accurate, we would appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Questions for either the staff or the applicant? Dave? Nothing? Okay. Cliff, how about you?
I have one question. I'm a little confused about the 400 feet. I understand in here it's got 400 plus to a structure, but when I looked at the site plan, it's got 100-foot buffer and then open space between that and where the units could be. What can go in the open space?
That could be a combination of stormwater facility. It could be natural vegetation that exceeds the 100-foot. It could be new landscaping.
Mr. Beebe, could you identify yourself?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Mike Beebe, 33 Old Kings North, Palm Coast. It could be wetlands. Any open space requirements that the Land Development Code requires.
But it would not be parking or any improved hard surface.
No, I mean, do you have the master plan?
Here's the diagram. I couldn't hear you. I'm sorry.
I think what Mr. Smith is referring to is
Yeah, hang on. I'm going to pull up the master plan and try to address that. Try to show the road system that's on our proposed concept plan that would fall within that area that you're talking about. But currently, we don't show parking, just the outlying road system that serves the project.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
While they're doing that, maybe anyone could state if they've had any ex parte communication for the record between since last time. I think, Mr. Smith, you weren't here last time, so yeah, you can, if you'd go ahead and disclose that now.
Still nothing.
I've had none.
I haven't had any.
Is this how you escape? Thank you. Get out of here with this?
Also, for the record, I just want to state that my name is Ray Tyner. I'm the planning manager for the city of Palm Coast. Been here, came on as the first environmental planner in 2002. Jose Papa is one of our senior planners, certified AICP, certified professional planner. And then also in the back, our staff that we have present, if you have any questions, is Sean Costello. He's our traffic engineer. He's a professional engineer. And Denise Bevan is our environmental professional. If you have any questions pertaining to environmental.
Close that window. Close the window.
Mr. Smith, did you get your question?
Do that again.
I think they were trying to bring something up.
Oh, okay.
PowerPoint. No. Now close these damn windows. Close it.
There you go.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
think it's coming up.
Okay, so there's our Exhibit B, our conceptual master plan, and you can see the green areas are open space, conservation, wetlands. You see the what is white would be our circulation system going around within that kind of that zone that you inquired about, Mr. Smith. There's proposed lakes.
Any parking areas would be associated with the piece of property that's labeled multifamily.
That's
is right. That
parking
right?
areas would be included in that brown color. That's
okay.
The multifamily on the plan. And within the commercial areas that are designated red.
So open space would be impervious. Would be
pervious.
Right.
Pervious, yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
No questions.
Glenn?
No questions.
I have just a couple. When we talked earlier, Mr. Pappas, about the possible uses of this property, you used assumptions for potable water, solid waste disposal. Where did those assumptions come from?
Those level of service standards are found within our comprehensive plan that that 1,000 square feet of non-residential development would have the impact of 0.1 gallons per day and 0.17 gallons per day for in terms of potable water requirements.
So those are standards that come from the state or from
They're established within the city, and they're based on historical usage within the city, yes.
Okay.
But memorialized within our comprehensive plan.
Okay. Second question, are the uses of the commercial property going to change under the MPD? For example, it's now zoned as Industrial 1, and we're going to zone it as COM 2. Is that right?
It will be a master plan development, the zoning, but within the master plan development agreement, those uses would be limited to those uses that are generally permitted within our COM 2 or general commercial zoning district. Yes, sir.
What kind of uses could currently be put to use in those pieces of property that would not be allowed, for example, in a COM 2 or a general commercial?
Yeah, strictly the type of light industrial uses, such as the outdoor storage and mainly outdoor storage, mini warehousing, that type of thing.
Okay. So, I noticed on the other side of US 1, a little further south, there are a number of automobile and metal refurbishers, or could that kind of a business be put on that piece of property now?
Currently, I believe that they can be, those would be considered outdoor storage and would potentially
be. That would not be allowed under this development order.
Right. The general commercial, again, limits it. General commercial mainly limits it to retail and office uses.
Yeah.
It's a way to generalize what types of uses.
And the developer could currently build 101 houses in there.
91, if I remember correctly. The number of acres that's currently in Estate 1 is what they would be.
Okay. And that's 1 acre zoning?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I think that answers all my questions. Okay, so we'll open up the festivities to the public portion of the hearing. Anybody who would like to speak, address the board, please do so by approaching the podium. State your name for the record. But just before you do, sir, this lady had a question, and I wouldn't let her answer it before. So I'd like her to start.
I answered it.
Did you? Okay, I'm sorry. Good, then. Anybody who'd like to speak, please come to the podium. I'd ask you to please limit your remarks to 3 minutes. That's the standard that the city council uses. If it's good enough for them, it's good enough for us.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Tim O'Donnell. I live at 8 Grand Place, and thank you for introducing yourself. I forgot my email.
Sorry about that.
Traffic safety and property values are a big concern for our residents. Two neighboring streets, Karras and Carrot, are already high-speed cut-through streets from Belterre to US 1. Adding 800 residents to the east side of US 1 will increase that traffic, endangering the many children, seniors, cyclists, and animals in the neighborhood. I researched what happens to the area property values when an apartment-style development is built next door. I've given you all a handout, which shows that the property values to go down. I'm not going to repeat it since I talked about it last month. The developer said his project will be like Integra Woods, but given that it will be located behind commercial property, it will be more like Palm Point, Madison Green, or Beach Village, all of which accept government subsidies. Last month, their plans showed a minimum of 650 square feet. This month, he's increased to 750, which would make it the second smallest apartment in Palm Coast, and still smaller than even Madison Green, which is highly government subsidized. So I think so much for the high-end apartments. Mr. Blessing promised to make not accepting government subsidies legally binding on the property. He said he would do this by using restrictive covenants. It is my understanding that the restrictive covenants would be placed on the property by Mr. Blessing and therefore could be removed at any time. Just as like a condo association, the developer could remove them if they chose to. This board should not approve this project until he fulfills his commitment and makes that restriction legally binding on himself and future property owners. At the beginning of your last board meeting, there was a short discussion about a traffic study for a Matanzas project. It appeared from the conversation that a project may have been approved in part based on developers' promises to take some action for a traffic study that may not have been accomplished before the City Council approved the project. I don't know if you remember that. Please don't let this happen again. All commitments made by the developers should be verified as completed before this board gives its approval. When I received the first neighborhood meeting notice, I immediately called Mr. Blessing and asked about his plans. During our phone call, he neglected to mention the change to multifamily. He just mentioned the industrial. And he told me twice that he had not submitted any paperwork to the city. I was very specific about asking him that. I then called the city, and Mr. Papa emailed the paperwork Mr. Blessing had already filed with the city. Basically, Mr. Blessing had lied to me. So much for being a good neighbor. I can only assume this behavior was to keep residents from attending the meetings and expressing questions. A few weeks ago, Mr. Blessing did meet with a few of us again in the neighborhood, and he told us he'd be increasing the minimum apartment size to 800 square feet. Then we get the documents, and we see he's changed his plans to 750. He must think the residents of Palm Coast are stupid, deaf, or not engaged in their community. Palm Coast needs reputable developers who want to be part of our community. Unfortunately, Mr. Blessing does not appear to be one of them. When established companies like Seagate, KB Home, and Integra build residential communities, you can look at the other projects they've done and see what they're like. With this project, we can't do that. Palm Coast 145 LLC was recently formed exclusively for this land deal. Mr. Blessing has told several of us that operating apartments is not what they do. So his promises to build a certain quality level and maintain property in a certain condition are not sincere. The Unified Land Development Code states the proposed development must not be in conflict with or contrary to the public interest. I contend that lower property values and increased risk of crime in the neighborhood is contrary to the public interest. The code also states, paraphrasing, the proposed development must not constitute a threat to the safety of local residents. I contend increased traffic on our side streets does just that. So I strongly request that you reject this proposal. Thank you.
I'm Louis Cicerello, 9 Coranda Place in Palm Coast. I'm here to reference the petition you guys got that was passed out by Irene. The petition was taken by a majority of the people that live in the Karis, Karat, and Kathleen area. There's 335 names on the petition, the people that are against this project for the rental properties and everything else. Their concerns are the three-story buildings, which you look at a 400-foot buffer zone. You're looking at it at an area where you're standing on the ground looking at it. Well, as a hunter, put me in a tree stand, or you get up there and I'll put me on a three-story building. What are you seeing, and what am I seeing? The people are not in favor of putting multi-family units in there, three-story buildings for apartments. Thank you.
Okay. Sean Schmidley. So I know a lot of people don't seem to have the time to go to church anymore, so we will bring church to you. This is Matthew 19:24. And again, I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. I hope this board considers those words. Our community is quaint. Many of us enjoy the peace and quiet. You're supposed to be our advocates. I don't know what the right answer is, but I do pray that these decisions are being made for the right reasons.
Good evening. My name is David Agata. I was here last meeting. I live at 32 Karras Trail. I'm a homeowner there. I just want to just reiterate a couple of things that I did last time. I spent 20 years in the city of Coral Springs working as a police officer. City of Coral Springs is considered one of the top 20 cities for its planning and the way that it does business in the country. In spite of all of the planning and all of the work that we did there in Coral Springs, we were unable to fight government housing. In spite of having good coffers, having good attorneys with all due respect, and having a very strong commission and community, we were unable to do that. I want to just bring to your attention that 348 apartments within 5 miles of already established Section 8 housing, which is almost 25 years old, is going to attract Section 8 housing. And in spite of our desire to say, no, we're not going to do that, I venture to say that you are welcome to call down to the folks down in South Florida and find out what the results of that were. I will give you some of those highlights. Number one, that project will cost each one of the people that have allowed you to be in the position that you're in. By the values of our home, they will drop. If you speak to any of the slick sleeve deputy sheriffs, which are already stressed in the amount of work they have to do and what Tim was talking about, any of those complexes now is just a nightmare for those deputies because of the amount of calls for service. Just to give you some background, I was with all those meetings with Mr. Blessing. He's a really nice guy. I appreciate what he's trying to do. And we really do, as citizens, want to see a commercial real estate coming back. We really do want to see industry come back, but not at the cost of our homes, not at the cost of the values of our homes. And by the way, apartments are going to give you about 50% of the tax base that you need to pay for them. We found that out the hard way down south. So that means that the city of Palm Coast will pay that price. And right now, we don't have that money in our coffers. That's why we're attempting to bring industry in. So we're not here to tell you, no, we don't want good development. We just want to tell you that we don't want to live next to 350 apartments. There is no way that you're going to be able to maintain that and handle that. That will ultimately cost you. And I know all the reports sound awesome. However, the reality is, and all you have to do is look down south where it's been built up, and you're going to see the results of that. And I would ask you, as our representatives, to understand that those 300 people that signed that are the people that you represent. And we're asking you to hear that so that you understand it's not that we don't want comprehensive industry, we just don't want rentals. We bought with the concept of ownership. Ownership will ultimately give you pride, and we won't have to worry as much. So I'd ask you to really consider that before you make your decision tonight. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Terry Howe, and I represent the homestead at 29 Karras Trail. And these street names, Karras Trail, Kathleen Trail, and Carrot Path, may ring unfamiliar to your ears, but to us, it's our homes, our neighbors, and our friends. This new redo of the zoning and plan here is an unfair hardship on all of these residents represented here, who relied on the parameters already set in place by the city of Palm Coast. That is 90 single-family residential lots. That's what we saw. That's what was shown to us, the designated green belt. That's what helped us influence why we decided to buy the house we did, why we decided to put roots down here, when we purchased and built and improved our homesteads here. The 424 feet of buffer is 1,260 steps. That's 2.1 minutes to wander from the end of the multifamily apartments to our backyards. Would the investor be willing to relocate us as residents to an area like what we believed this area to be, 90 acres of greenbelt? Of course not. That would be an unfair hardship on them. So we respectfully ask that you maintain the original vision of the single-family homes as written when we bought and invested our lives on these streets. Our home purchases were significant. We looked hard and long and hoped and celebrated when we were able to sign and close on our homes. Please don't change the rules on us. We relied on these parameters and those green spaces and conservation spaces and single-family zoning. When we searched for these homes and danced a little at the offer acceptances and couldn't stop smiling after we finally closed on our homes. Please don't change the rules just because you can. Allow them to build and prosper within the original guidelines of building single-family homes. After all, it is also what they saw when they purchased their parcel as well.
My name is Len Dignard, and I live at 41 Kathleen Trail. I also spoke the last time we were here, and I did a little bit different pitch tonight, but then after seeing Mr. Blessing's pictures up there, I want to make a comment about those. He took a picture 400-plus feet back with all the existing trees there. They will come down, folks. There will be the 100-foot buffer, yes, but those trees are coming down, so don't be deceived by this 200, 300, and 400 picture that he's showing. Yeah, okay. And I thank you for mentioning this is the third time that this has been on the agenda for this council. I'm sure he'll just keep coming back and coming back until he gets his way. Mr. Blessing, and I'm not disparaging him, the truth is he's not our friend. He's not your friend. He's a businessman who's trying to make money. And I have no problems with that. That's the American way. We all are trying to make money. But he won't be here after this is all over. We'll get this through, and he's gone. And we live with it. He did come to my house. I was the one that opened my house up for him to come. And he did come in there. And in his email, I could read it to you, he said there was some changes, it wasn't major, but some significant changes that he was making to the plan. He came in and he talked about the 650, as he mentioned tonight. He told us he'd do something around 800. We see 750 in the MPD. Now, I'm not complaining about those 50 feet, but that's the type of thing we've been going through for the last number of months with him. We get one story to see another story. Is it a lie? No, it isn't. But certainly, we don't know where to go with this. And we are not happy, or we aren't ready to accept apartments. That's what it's all about here. We do not want that. We do not want it, do not want to have what it brings. So you take that 420 feet that he's talking about, stand at a football field in the third, look down at the end and have somebody standing there. And that person is, you can see him down there. But stand back for a minute and put a three-story building down there that's 36 feet high with 50 apartments in it. You look at it then and tell me how dynamic that is to your scenery. And then multiply that by 11 buildings. We'll see it over there, folks. We'll see it. Mr. Blessing keeps with this impassioned plea that he says there will be no government housing. Why isn't it in the MPD? I heard him say he couldn't put it in there, but I don't know why. I may have missed it. But I don't understand why it can't be in there. He can put that he's giving people a 20% decrease in rent. He can put other things in there. Why can't he put that in there so we can hold his feet to the fire on that? He leaves here, we've got nothing to go on. I did a little bit of research. I'll
sir,
try to make this
3 minutes, if you don't mind.
I'm sorry?
3 minutes.
Okay. How am I over it? Okay, I'll wrap it up with, I did a lot of research. I looked around the area, number of places. There's signs up all over the place with land that is for sale that now is zoned for multifamily things right up on US 100. How many more of these things do we need? They're there for Pinnell, they're there for the county, and they're there for Palm Coast. We in this area have to consider all of those areas. We're not just Palm Coast. We have those areas all around us. Thank you.
Thank you.
evening. My name is Sarah Seedling. My husband and I live at 21 Kathleen Trail. Every time I look at the plot map or discuss the proposed zoning change request with neighbors, I'm appalled that this is being even considered in our nice neighborhood. Now I see that there is another new version. Well, hard to believe, it is probably the worst one yet. At the December meeting, the investors suddenly asked for a continuance so they could go back and address some of our neighborhood concerns that arose from the public comment portion of the meeting. The investor, Mr. Blessing, sent one of my neighbors an email, just heard about that, saying that he would be in our area on December 30th, and could he meet with several of us to discuss our concerns. He even offered to buy lunch for us, but we declined. We met with him in good faith, thinking that he actually wanted to work on the issues to which we objected. The first thing he said was how surprised they were that we objected to a 750-square-foot apartment. He said that they had just thrown that number out as a possible size. Now he has changed the size from the size of the two-car garage to maybe a three-car garage. Is this another size he is just throwing out in hopes we will be pacified? Nowhere in the MPD is a maximum size listed. Is 750 square feet also the maximum size? The investors sat in our meeting taking notes, listening, and asking questions. Towards the end of the meeting, after we thought we had made progress, and he had actually listened to us for the first time, I asked when we would get back together to view changes to his plan. He said he only had to do that if he was making any changes, and he didn't intend to do that. The rest of we sat there stunned and couldn't believe that we had just wasted 2 hours with him so he could come back here to tell you he had met with us again. Several of the attendees had to make work provisions to meet with him because they considered the meeting one of great importance. I believe our host, Len Diggard, addressed the lies Mr. Blessing told him in order to gather the neighbors. Before we left, Mr. Blessing said we just had to trust him. He admitted to us that he has never been involved in building an apartment complex. We really don't know what his experience is. We do know that Mr. Beebe's company develops golf courses, but there are none on the property map. I noticed that the latest plot map has a vague area back in a corner marked amenities area with a pond adjacent to it. This is closer than the building setback. When it is warm, we will hear about a child that has been drowned in an unprotected pond or pool. Remember that as far as we know, there will be no pool or clubhouse on this property. Section 4D of the MPD lists active and passive recreation. Can we ask what that means? Section 4A of the MPD mentions that this property will incorporate crime prevention through environmental design, CPTED strategies. The problem with that is while this development may incorporate this, our neighborhood probably does not. All an individual has to do is run through a 100 tree line to disappear into our neighborhood streets and properties because there will be no property border fences and no way to block off the drainage ditches. Under the CPTED guidelines, item A says to place activities in a safer location to overcome the vulnerability of these activities. Item C says to locate gathering areas in locations that offers natural surveillance and access control. This is contradictory
Ma'am,
to the activity
could
area.
Could you please wrap up? Your 3 minutes are up.
Even if the investor, while we were in our meeting with him, we asked what he would do if this project was being built next to him. He said he would not like it and he would fight this. So we ask that you do not approve any portion of this zoning. This is going to lower our property values, and it will almost make it impossible to even sell our property at any price. Thank you.
How you guys doing? My name's David Pettit. Me and my fiance live at 29 Kathleen Trail, thanks to her late grandfather. I just wanted to take it from a different perspective. I'm 32 years old, she's 31. The job market, when we moved back here about 3-4 years ago, one of the worst in the country, so I figured, you know, that was at the time. I know business is coming up and everything, so I just wanted to consider that with how it affects crime or people with too much time on their hands to do. So I was 18 years old. I worked more than 40 hours a week and still managed to get in a little trouble, so... So I'd rather see more businesses and stuff. That being said, I figured the job thing, I ain't heard anything from the jobs in Palm Coast. Job market is down, so just figured I'd throw that out there, something a little different. Thank you.
Yeah, my name's Tom Tram, and I live at 22 Carriage Trail. I know that we're new here. We've only been here for about 4 years. I've been on water restrictions since we've been here, watering the yard. I get upset when I hear people wanting to come and just build, and I don't know how many wells we have. I don't know any of that stuff. But I'm sure that if we could get off these water restrictions and make it simpler for understanding. I don't want this thing anywhere around. And I don't know how many of you guys would want this in your neighborhood. It's just not a good thing. I'm I'm retired. I don't see a whole lot of businesses here to accommodate a bunch of people like this young man just said. I'm dead set against it. And if I didn't sign that petition at that fellow at 32 has, I want to. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Roger Sealing. My wife and I live at 21 Kathleen Trail. Our street and neighbors are adjacent to the parcel of land being discussed today. I'm a licensed professional engineer in the state of Ohio, and no, I don't plan on becoming a licensed engineer in the state of Florida. I think I'm retired, and it's time for me to rest. But at least with your understanding the fact that I'm an engineer, you can understand some of my concerns. After given the invitation to walk this parcel of land, I did, and I took several of the photographs. You can see one right here. There's several others that we'll show. These were just submitted by my wife. Although we've lived here 6 years, this was my first time to explore on this parcel of land. I simply walked beside the drainage canal that's right beside Lynn Dignard's house, and I took some photographs of that just before I walked back in the area, and you can see that the lake that part of the land, part of the properties on Kathleen Trail, back up against a lake, and it's looks like you could walk across it. The drainage ditch that then crosses underneath Kathleen Trail and goes down into Mr. Blessing's property is about 15 feet deep. You can see here. There's a little bit of water in the bottom of it, but not much. And then there's another photograph. I wanted to see how this, here, that you can see right here, this is the canals here to the left, the drainage ditch, and this is going down and actually ties into, it just continues, there's a culvert that it goes through and goes down by Karras. I had always thought that this went down to the lake that's on the property. It looks like it's at least a 10-acre lake. I don't know. I didn't try to measure it. But here's the other property looking out into the lake that the houses on the north side of, or on the north side of Kathleen Trail back up against. And you can hardly even see any water in it. Could we go? The one thing that I had always thought was that this would, here's a photograph of the density of the woods. Mr. Blessing showed us the density of the woods. A lot of it's a lot more like this. And now if you take half that away and put a lake in place of it, it's kind of hard to hide behind a lake. Anyway, there is a lake back there. And, I guess this is showing there's a house there, and that's probably close to, we tried to get to between 300 and 400 feet. And you can see the house circled there. We've got more photographs than I thought that I was going to have with me today. The first photograph was of the lake. Now, I had always thought that this canal went back to this lake. It does not. But this is a lake. You can walk across it. You could go out there. We could leave here right now and walk down there, and we could go to this little road that was a launching point, I guess, at one time for the lake. And you could walk clear over to the trees on the other side and never get your feet dirty. You would not get wet. It is completely dry. And if this goes through and all the lakes that are shown on the nice, pretty maps that Mr. Blessing and Mr. Beebe have shown you, if this goes through and they decide to start pumping, the next thing is going to be the aquifer that's underneath there that they're pumping from is going to be overwhelmed with this much water, which, of course, with the hot summers that we've got, that's all going to just evaporate. So we got to pump more and pump more. Got to keep them full, right? So it looks right. If so, then once that aquifer is empty, then are we going to have to worry about sinkholes? Concerns me. And if we fill all this area with water, then what happens when we have the next hurricane and it rains for a day and a half? And where's all that water going to go? I don't have flood insurance on my house. Do you?
Sir, 3 minutes.
Okay. Anyway, the current zoning of 1 acre lots for single family homes, that's what we knew we were getting into when we bought our place 6 years ago. That's what we expected to stay. I can't believe that this property won't eventually be developed, but I would certainly hope that it would not be developed the way we're being told that this property is, that they're trying to do. We currently live on Kathleen Trail, and there are three houses that were built within the last 2 years, and there are two more that are currently under construction. One of them, they've barely got the concrete forms in place. We're still growing, but that all is going to stop if this goes through. Do you really want to turn away legitimate expansion, or do we want to pander to someone who wants to sell the property as a poorly developed apartments? Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Frank Ciafalo. I live at 25 Parrish Trail. My comment really is more of what it would cost the homeowners of Palm Coast, the city of Palm Coast, for this development. In the master plan development agreement, there's a section 7 that says site development plan. And there's a section 7 that says under E, all services for the property, including fire protection, shall be provided by the responsible parties. Can the city attorney tell me who the responsible party is for building a fire station, fire truck, buying the property, and manning that 24 hours a day?
We'll get you that answer.
I'm sorry?
We'll get you that answer.
Because, I mean, it's something that's going to come out of our pocket. I think, I say out of our pocket, the city is going to have to spend, unless the builder is going to agree to pay for it. If I remember correctly, when they built Kohl's, I thought that Kohl's actually had the fire station 21 destroyed. They built their building there, and I think they paid for the fire station's new location. I might be wrong about that. But maybe the builder would be willing to pay for the fire station by the fire truck. One final thing. Look at us here. Put yourself on this side of the aisle tonight. Thank you.
Yes, good evening. Chuck Johnson, 26 Kathleen Trail. I also spoke the last time we were here. I was going to read a letter that I already sent to you folks. Apparently you read it because you've already brought up the 400 feet buffer. It's only a 100-foot buffer, and the rest is a two-lane road that will have all the dumpsters on that Mr. Beebe couldn't figure that out, but that's we'll help you out with that. A couple other things I want to tell you about. My occupation for the last 11, 12 years has been an environmental health and safety coordinator for a facility in the area. Junkyards cannot go where they say they can go. Okay, they can go across the street, but they cannot go on the front of this property. It's an environmental hazard. Okay, they leak chemicals, they leak oil. They cannot go in that area, just so you know that, Mr. Beebe. My wife and I built our house in 1998 on Kathleen Trail. We took every frickin' dime that we had, but we looked at what was out there first, and we realized behind us was 90 single-family homes. But we went with that. We understood that. We built our house with every dime that we had. Did you do that with every dime that you had? Well, we did, okay? And now you folks, and I hope you're not, but you folks are going to turn around and give these two gentlemen permission to put 348 apartments in there? I sure hope not. I honestly hope not. I pray to God that you don't. And one other thing I have to offer to you. 15 years ago, I ran for mayor of Palm Coast, okay? 3 months from today, I'm going to retire, and I'm going to run again. I will be out there. I will be doing politics in this city. And if this does get approved, Mr. Beebe, I'm going to be very polite to you, sir. I'm going to be very polite to both of you, but I will legally watch you every second.
Sir,
it just gets approved.
Sir, your 3 minutes are up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Anne Marie Haynes, and I live at 9 Kansas Path with my husband. We don't live right in the proximity of where the apartments are going to be built, but we live nearby. These are our neighbors, our community. And I wanted to just bring up a few things because I don't think there should be apartments built there. My husband and I built our home in 2002, and we had the same belief that they were residential, they were going to be homes, that we weren't going to have apartments being shoved down our throat. These gentlemen or businessmen, they just want to make money. I don't blame them for making money, but there's a lot of other areas in Palm Coast that have a lot of land. Even I think the town center has land that somebody could build apartments on. Why are they trying to shove it down our throat where we live in our area, where we have homes? Just like you have your homes, I'm sure you wouldn't be happy with an apartment building by you. My daughter lived at the Seminole Woods apartments, and they weren't that great. It's like the people that went through there, a lot of them are transients. Apartments draw transients, they come and go. There was always trucks moving people in and out all the time. These people don't care about their property. They're only there for a short time. They come and go, they don't care. The homeowners, we care about our property, we care about our community. And it's like, we voted you people in, and we expect you to do what the citizens of the Palm Coast want. You know, the businessman, he doesn't represent us. He represents himself. He represents making money, and that's fine. He can make money and have a profit. But you people were elected by us to represent us. And one of the problems I always want to bring up is the septic system. When we had the last hurricane, I lived down there on Kansas Path. We lost power. We weren't able to use our septic. I couldn't flush my toilets. I had to call the city to come down because the pumping system that we have, when the power goes out, he told me that if it was a certain time the switch was off, then it wouldn't pump the water. And my thing got, I almost overflowed my septic system. They had to pump it out for me. Another thing is our housing will decrease. A value of our homes, we've already lost a lot of value in our homes due to 2008, and it's still trying to come back. Now you're going to put an apartment complex there. It's going to make it worse for us. The traffic, increasing traffic in the area. It's like, I don't want to have a lot of traffic on Route 1. It's like, I come down that area. I drive down Route 1 a lot. I'm right off of Route 1. I don't want to have a lot more traffic coming. It's bad enough I hear the train. I don't want to have a bunch of traffic coming back and forth. It's just that he's saying that he's having high-end apartments. It's like there's not even going to be a pool in these apartments. How high-end are they going to be? So, I love to have businesses here. I would love to have businesses that would bring jobs to the community, but I wouldn't like to have you build more apartments where people that don't have jobs are going to be living there. What are they going to do? So please represent us, the citizens, and not businesses. Please think of us first. Thank you.
Seeing no one approach the podium, we're going to close the... Excuse me, one more speaker.
Could you bring up the lake and stuff and the sure. Showing with the water and everything? Mm-hmm.
Hello, is this on? Hello. My name's Peter Petrosky. I live at 67 Karras Trail. First point I'm going to make is Mr. Davis actually commented on it last meeting. Once we get to the slide here of showing where the actual property is going to be and showing where the drainage ditches are and the color map. You know what I'm talking about?
No. Sorry. This is having a problem tonight. Hey, stop the clock for him. Sir. Yeah. Is that...
So as you can see, on that the top right corner there, where that water is going up the back of those lots, that's where I live. That's where several of us live. I didn't buy my house to have lakefront property. That is a drainage ditch all the way from the north end to the south end, about 100-foot drainage ditch. Now, he's talking about, I'm not really sure where the buildings are going to be on there. He's saying 400 feet, but once... All that's going to be cleared. All that trees you saw in those pictures, they're gone. They're going to clear all that out. I'm going to be looking over a lake, through the woods, to Grandma's back of her apartment, okay? A 36-foot-high apartment building. And I got to worry. I know that that's a drainage ditch going through kind of the middle that goes up towards the north. And just living there a few years, that ditch has never had more than a foot or two of water when we've had some serious rain. Now you're going to put water in there 24/7, and then you're going to have hurricanes and flood waters and stuff coming in, and I'm expected not to flood all those houses to the right. The gentleman spoke to saying that it's going to be handling capacity and they'll have all that stuff, but Mother Nature kind of does what she wants to do, and when you give her opportunities like that, she likes to take advantage of that. So I guess we'll have to get flood insurance. But again, I revert to Mr. Davis, he asked about that. The article that was referenced in the Flagler Live talking about changing zoning back to residential, single-family residential, not multifamily, was better for Palm Coast, better for drainage issues. That's what the city was looking at. So Mr. Tyner actually said that's why he thinks this was a good deal, because, you know, it's not going to affect anybody else like that other property that is being developed up in Matanzas Woods. So that's the first thing. The other thing was the fire station. They still haven't addressed that issue as far as if we have to have another fire station for 350 new units, the three-story building. I don't know if the current fire department can cover that. So who's going to pay for the fire station? All these people will. City of Palm Coast, I hope, has the money to do that. Apartments right now, I think there's like 3,000 units that are planned to go out in the town center. And there's another property, Edge Properties, out there, No Culvert Lane, that just is getting annexed into the city of Palm Coast for apartments. So let's keep them out there on 100 near commercial properties. Let's not stick these things in the middle of residential areas. And so with that, I think that'll do it for me. So thank you.
Okay, with that, seeing no one approach the podium, we're going to close the public portion of the meeting and bring the issue back to the board for any questions or concerns. Are there any open questions that we can address for the folks tonight? I know that we had the discussion about there was a couple of questions about a firehouse and a fire engine, but we don't know yet whether or not this would trigger a fire addition. Is that right?
That's correct. The fire rescue goes through a periodic analysis of where the needs are, and they have to take into account where growth is occurring and where there might be levels of deficiencies in response time. So while it's true that every single development has an impact on fire rescue, I think those types of discussions occur when you look at development at a closer to the ground look. And of course, we have existing the issue of whether we have the apparatus to serve 2 and 3 story buildings. We have 2-story single family homes, and we do have office buildings and even apartments that are 3 stories, one here in town center. So if there was not I don't work for the fire department, but I would venture to say that they have the apparatus to serve.
Jose, requirements such as fire or parks are generally funded out of impact fees, right?
There is a fire impact fee that would cover capital improvements to any new fire facilities.
So the developer would be contributing substantial impact fees to the city that could be used for the expansion of fire rescue parks?
There would be impact fees for any residential and non-residential development, and park impact fees for the residential.
I forgot the question was answered, that who pays for that? The impact fees pay for it.
Impact fees pay for certainly a portion of the development.
Okay.
A portion.
Okay. What other open questions are there? Okay, so why don't we bring this back to the board for any further discussion? Yes, sir? There was an open question?
Well, it's an address. Jay Livingston, I'm the attorney for the applicant. I just wanted to address one comment that was made regarding the MPD agreement and the language in it regarding the Section 8 government subsidized housing. And perhaps Mr. Tyner and the city attorney can help with this discussion. There was no misrepresentation. We put the language into the MPD agreement. I actually drafted it myself, that said that the developer would be obligated to restrict it through private covenants, and that provision could not be amended without the city's approval. So there would be a gatekeeper function by the city, so that could never be amended. Now, that was taken out for legal reasons. We didn't have a chance to have a discussion about that, but I want the public to know that that was put into the MPD agreement. I drafted it myself. And that if there is any legal way where the city can get behind that, we are willing to do that, and that's just a testament to the developer's commitment to having that restriction and not leaving it open to a further amendment later by another owner or the homeowners themselves without the city's approval. So I don't know. I mean, legally, I know it's a sticky issue when you're writing those into even a master plan agreement, which has more flexibility, but that actually was in the draft that was submitted to the city.
And that's correct. They did submit that revision, and staff, well, we got together, and our analysis of it is that we potentially could jeopardize us with federal funding, but that's something for sure that we can talk with our attorneys, you know, a little bit further prior to going on. But they are willing
to jeopardize other issues of
federal
funding.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, the applicant was faithful and brought that to our attention, but that's something that we feel that we cannot do.
Mr. Chairman,
Yes.
Yeah, this comes up quite a bit, and it does violate the Fair Housing Act to have a provision that says there won't be any subsidized housing in your governmental agreements. We do look at, you can include provisions about student housing and things like that, but you can't specifically state those words about subsidized housing, or that does violate federal law. Well,
and if we need to be clear about this, though, because this is an important point. The restriction is that you can't put it into your approved agreement, not that a restriction in the covenants or restrictions would violate federal law.
Mr. Chairman.
You'll put it in the covenants and restrictions of the property.
And if the city was able to tell us we had to, not only are we willing to, but we drafted that language into the MPD. What Mrs. Reichman is saying is that there would be an impact on the city if that restriction was put in, not that the restriction itself would be a violation if it was in our private covenants. Was that? I don't want to speak for you. I just want to be clear about that.
Mr. Chairman, what they put in their covenants and restrictions does not bind the city.
Okay. So you could put it in the covenants and restrictions to limit the rentals to no government subsidies, but you can't put it in the development order.
That's correct.
Yeah. I just wanted to be clear about that. It's not a fact that what we put in would be illegal or that it could not exist. It's just that the city can't officially endorse it through ordinance is probably the best way to put it.
Right.
Okay. Okay, so discussions?
Mr. Dillon,
yes.
Could I ask the city attorney to give a definition to the people here of what this board?
Mr. Davis? Mr. Davis, you need to speak into the mic.
He has a question for you, actually,
sure,
Katie.
Sure.
Katie, I have a question for you. Could you explain to the people that are here what the responsibilities are of this board in listening to their concerns and what our responsibilities are?
Certainly, Mr. Davis, and I was planning to do that for the board's benefit. The board is an appointed board, just for clarification, too. It's not an elected board. It's an appointed board. And you all are charged with very important responsibilities, not to look to a lot of popular comment and so forth. You have to look to the code. You have limited power. You can't do whatever you want to do, whatever you feel in your heart you want to do. You're constrained by the city code. It's not a freewheeling kind of a position. So there's very, as Mr. Papa listed and Mr. Tyner's referred to, there's very detailed staff reports, and I know the public is aware of that. And the codes provide exactly what the standards are for the board in making their decision. And there's very, very different standards between these two decisions that you're making, the one being the comp plan change, and that's only as to the 90 acres of Greenbelt going to 81 residential and 9 industrial. So that's just a portion of the project. So for that part of the decision that you have, the first part, that's a comprehensive plan change. And for that, your decision can be based on what you feel might happen in the future. It's talking about the future in terms of traffic, in terms of burden on the public facilities, and all those different factors that you look to generally with any development. Then we get to the second decision. So if the first decision is yes, and then we move on to the second decision, which is rezoning.
First decision, yes, is the facilities meet the code.
Well, it's not so much that, Mr. Chairman, as it is, do you feel that this is a future land use of in 81 acres residential and 9 industrial is something that makes sense for the city in the future, based on what you've heard about the city's possibility to service from from 90 acres of greenbelt to 81 residential and 9 of industrial. So it's looking at just those limited acres and those limited changes in labels.
Okay.
And then you get into more detail with the rezoning, and you're looking at a much different decision. And in that decision, you're very constrained. As Mr. Davis was referencing, you have to look at evidence presented, and it must be evidence that is competent evidence to support your decision. And what supports your decision as competent evidence is testimony or written material from a source that has generally expert knowledge, or it can be a private citizen that's talking about some of the things that all of us as citizens can talk about, which is compatibility of a land use with another land use and those kinds of things. Traffic is not something that a layperson can testify to. A lot of the issues that the public generally talks about, they don't want this, they feel it might reduce their property values, they're concerned about the environment, they're concerned about stormwater, all those things. It's not that you don't listen to them, but you have to evaluate all of that testimony when you're looking at your quasi-judicial portion of your hearing and decide how is that competent? Is that from a source that is someone who has that expert knowledge? And how does that compare with what I've heard from the staff, who are your experts? And not that they're your only experts, but they do supply expertise on the subjects that they've talked about. And also remembering that this isn't the end of the line for this project by any stretch, as you all know. This is a rezoning. That's all it is. And there's a lot more to come to evaluate whether this project truly can accomplish what they're claiming it can in terms of the number of units and so forth.
Okay.
So,
does that answer your question?
So the best place for citizen concern would be council.
Well, the best place for citizen concern is really at the comp plan level here tonight, and also not to say that you don't hear from citizens on the rezoning. That's part of your obligation. But you have to consider each citizen and what their occupation is and what their special knowledge is as to the testimony they give. And they can talk, anyone can talk about compatibility and aesthetics of something. But as far as traffic and stormwater and those kinds of things, then you need to know their special expertise.
Okay. So we're back here at the board for a discussion or a motion. Let's start with you.
Well, I just have a couple of thoughts. I'm not really having a problem with the land use change to residential because there's a lot of different zoning categories that go in residential. I'm struggling with the loss of the green belt and the fact that the buffer is only 100 feet and part of it is an open pond. That's a little bit hard for me to swallow. So I may feel differently as each vote is done, but the loss of the green belt and the fact that only a 100-foot buffer is specified in the agreement, even though there's open space shown, there's no guarantee that that will be anything other than grass.
But my understanding that the 100-foot buffer is a requirement in a comprehensive plan, but that the developer has specified, at least on two sides, that the buffer is in greater than 400 feet.
And the green belt's the same size.
But the buffer, the undisturbed buffer, is only 100 feet. That's what's required in here. The rest is open space. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's buffer. And part of that is pond, as somebody pointed out along there. So where that pond is, you really have no buffer other than open water. That I'm struggling with. The fact that you had green belt there before, and now you only have a 100-foot buffer that's guaranteed.
I thought the conservation section was more in the center.
It is. It's the same acreage, just reconfigured.
Right, but Greenbelt went around Greenbelt basically surrounded the adjacent homes, as I look at this. And so now that Greenbelt would go away. The only thing that would replace it are the provisions that's in the MPD agreement. And as I look at this, the only thing it says is a 100-foot buffer, even though there's been talk about 400 feet and you can't see through the trees and all that. All I see in here is a 100-foot buffer. I'm having a little heartburn with that.
Mr. Beebe?
Can I address that?
Yeah.
We get more time if he gets up.
Go ahead, Mr. Beebe.
I'm sorry. He's getting up there to answer questions.
You're out of order, sir.
Of course I am.
The requirement in the Land Development Code for buffering is much less restrictive than the 100 feet. The Greenbelt designation, it does not mean that land is Greenbelt undisturbed designation. If in that existing Greenbelt designation, you could build a single-family home within single-family to single-family within 10 feet of the property.
And I understand that. It just
so we felt like that by memorializing a 100-foot buffer, we were going way beyond what would be normally done in a development like this. And we felt 100 feet, that's substantial. With respect to the pond versus the buffer, that's conceptual. We feel like enhancing that existing on-site drainage ditch that goes from north to the east would be an improvement, but we don't have to do that. I mean, that's just conceptual bubble plan at this point in time. So we have the ability to do, we have to leave the ditch, the stormwater ditch. It has to stay there. That's, you know, it's in an easement. It's part of the city's overall stormwater system. But we could leave it as is and increase existing vegetation along there. I mean, that's possible to do. That's not an issue on our end. We felt like this would probably enhance property. But if there's a problem with that, we have no problem with going back and adjusting that eastern property line and saying we'll leave the ditch exactly like it is and take, if the ditch is a 15-foot easement, we'll add an additional 85 feet of natural buffer along there, if that satisfies, you know, your concerns.
Could you pull up the plat rendering with the proposed retention and multifamily layout one more time?
Yeah, if you can get it. So that area up there on the in the upper right-hand corner is that's an existing drainage ditch, and I can't remember if it's 25 feet or what the actual width of that is. We could leave that as is and then do the remainder of that 100 foot in existing natural vegetation.
Sorry, John, are you finished?
No, I'm done. Yeah.
just to piggyback off what Clint was saying, this pond in the north easterly corner of the parcel that will run north to south, rather than making that a pond, have you floated the idea of leaving it existing vegetation? And of that vegetation, what's the approximate, what's the growth rate? I mean, I saw the pines and he stated that he stood up on a 12-foot ladder and then, you know, showed it. And then there was another gentleman who stated that, you know, being up in a tree stand, which would be completely inappropriate for residential land use like this. But if someone were up there, are they going to be looking at tree leaves, or are they going to be looking at open space?
That's the area that I was just referring to in my response to Mr. Smith. There's an existing drainage ditch there that's an easement that has to be maintained. And let's say it's 25 foot wide. I'm not sure exactly what it is. But so we could add, we have to leave the 25 feet. We could then, instead of showing the ponding that we show there, we could do an additional 75 feet of existing natural vegetation and preserve that. As to what's actually there in terms of the size of the pine trees, I'm not going to stand up here and say I know, because I don't. You saw a little bit of character of what the property looks like from a pine tree standpoint. That's fairly typical, but I'm not going to tell you that there's 80-foot pines there. I don't know for sure what those are there, but we would preserve those within our 100-foot if that's something that would make you a little more comfortable.
Just so I'm clear, I think.
So this area is the easement, the existing ditch.
Yes.
So kind of what I think, Clint, you're talking about is your concern is keeping that natural and then adding on, being consistent to what you're doing up here.
Down there.
Is kind of bringing that
right.
rest of that buffer here. So, you know, like one no of problem the citizens said.
No problem whatsoever.
And just so, you know, the board knows that you can, you know, if the board was recommended approval, and that would be on the MPD portion of the code, you could recommend subject to specific conditions that you would want to see.
Such as this. And we could revise that bubble plan, you know, between now and the next public hearing to reflect that.
Okay, so the southeasterly corner of the proposed multifamily zoning and that end of the property line, do you have any idea what that setback distance would be for this corner? We already know it's 424 feet from the northwesterly, the southeasterly corner. Do you have an idea what that setback would be for the proposed improvement?
Along the eastern, the southeastern?
Yes.
Where there's no ditch?
Right, where the...
That's 100 feet.
That's
100 foot buffer there.
The 400 feet is to the orange.
The 400 right. feet is to the first building
from the
property line.
Right, and the buildings are going to go from the northwest to the southeast. On the southeasterly side, what would be the setback from the property line, assuming the existing vegetation would remain in place?
There's a 100-foot.
Just be the 100.
There's a 100-foot buffer along that southern and along that eastern and northern property line.
Can you just draw on there with your question? I think I understand your question.
What's this setback from here to here?
That's the 424 feet.
No, he means to the...
On the southeasterly corner, the 420 feet northwest.
Yeah, the multifamily, that is the closest distance to a property line. That corner right there is 424 feet, and it's a two-story building.
And to piggyback off what Mr. Tyner illustrated earlier, all this would remain... existing native vegetation.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Now, this is probably more for Mr. Papa. What is the current impact fees for multifamily on a per unit basis?
I don't have that information off the top of my head. Are we?
Okay.
And then,
who would pay for those impact fees, though?
Every developer is required to pay impact fees, and depending on the type of development, that could vary anywhere from everybody has to pay transportation.
Right.
But not everyone has to pay school impact fees. Non-residential does not pay school impact fees, only residential.
Would and multifamily pay those?
Yes, sir, they would.
I'm running out of questions, but I'm sure another one will pop up.
Mr. Davis.
I have a problem that the other ones do too, but if it's not in writing, it's not binding. And what we've got here in front of us after the last meeting, the changes that were supposedly made, is not really bonding. We can sit here and say, okay, the buffer is going to be this, it's going to be that, but it's not in writing what was presented to us and what was presented to the city, which has been working on it pretty hard. So, I mean, there's, Mr. Chairman, it's just too many unknowns.
It's way premature for a final site plan.
Yes.
There is a final site plan that is coming back to the planning department, right?
If
this is approved by city council and the state, what's the next step?
There will be the requirement to come back with a, depending on the type of the development that, there will be the subdivision master plan. And then eventually that gets into site plan approval, and that's where you would get those details of...
Details of the buffer.
And where exactly where the buildings are going to be, and that would require the review of additional departments within the city, including our stormwater, traffic engineering, utilities would get more involved to make sure that any lift stations or pump stations that might be required are to be included as part of that approval.
At that point in time, we would see a final plan that would be specific about buffers and trees left in place and those kinds of things?
Yeah, yes, sir. That's correct.
I have one other question, and maybe this is for Mr. Blessing or Mr. Beebe, but I keep looking at the open space that's shown on here. Has there been any consideration about changing some of the open space to buffer?
Sure. We would absolutely be willing to do that. Sure, when, you know, this, again, evolves with community support and questions. I love the trees. I want to keep as many trees as I can. I think it adds beauty to the community, to the neighborhood. It adds interest. I mean, you know, in all fairness, I love Mike, but he drew the water, which he, you know, enhanced some of the waterway to add features. If we want to keep it wooded, I love it. I'll keep it wooded. I will put it in the MPD. I will say we will touch a tree within whatever distance we decide it will be. I have no issues with that.
Okay, thank you. I have one other question, maybe for Mr. Livingston. The out parcels that are shown on here, I assume those are old Bunnell Development Company platted lots or whatever. My understanding is you still have to provide access to them should they ever, I know some of them are in the conservation area, but I mean, have you thought about that at all? Or?
Yes, and contact has been made. There are a few stragglers. There's four that I was able to identify, five actually. There's one in the orange. The zoning and the comprehensive plan change can go through, but before there would be any platting, site planning, you're right, we either have to purchase those lots, consolidate them into the ownership, or there would have to be access provided to them. I checked the records on all of them, and they're all vacant. They are they go back to, I believe, the old DuPont plat, but I have to double check. I don't have that plat title search with me tonight. But the owners are paying taxes. It's a nominal sum every year, but they are paying taxes. So there really wouldn't be able to be any kind of hard site planning done until those were consolidated or the plan was revised to accommodate the access issue that you raised.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any further discussion?
I have one question.
I'm sorry. The public portion is closed. We're not going to reopen
anymore.
It.
We're done.
How about a motion?
And this would be for the comp plan.
For the comp plan, yes. It's my daughter and my grandchildren.
I would move to approve the plan, subject to the revisions that's stated within the MPD pertaining to the open space.
Sorry to interrupt you, but we are just talking about the comp plan change, which is your first
agenda.
Under number two, yeah, your first recommended
item
action.
Two.
Behind two.
Those those specific conditions for the buffer would be in your agenda number three for those MPD. Yep. So this, we're talking about item number two, the comprehensive plan amendment.
Then I would move to approve the plan consistent with staff recommendations.
This is on the comp plan only. I will second that motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. I guess Irene, call the roll.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Mr. Dolney.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
I abstain.
Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Motion carries.
Mr. Davis, could you just state for the record your reason for abstention?
Yes. As I've stated, it's still too many unknowns that we are doing, and I don't know. I know I'm not supposed to do this and I'm not supposed to do that, but it's not right. Something's just not right, and that's why I'm abstaining from it.
Understood.
From the last meeting, I was very vocal, and this time I'm not I think I should abstain from this.
Understood. And I would suggest if you feel that way that maybe consider changing your vote to or changing your decision to a no vote at this time, with the idea that, you know, you've expressed your opinion that you think that there should be more information provided, because typically abstention is used for when you have a conflict of interest or something of that nature. I would just advise you to go ahead and vote no if your concern is there isn't enough information.
Okay.
Thank you.
I will change my vote from abstaining to a no.
Mr. Chair, that's 3-4 and 1-no.
Thank you. Okay, how about the second one, the zoning amendment? I need a motion and a second.
Personally, I would like to see them go back and come back with, and address some of the things that we talked about.
Well, I was going to have a question after we had a motion, but maybe I'll ask it now. Will the site plan come back to us? Can we specify that the site plan comes
yes,
back
it,
to us?
It would meet the density requirements.
So that we can ensure those buffer things are taken care of?
Yeah, but what I would suggest, though, I mean, if because the way the site plan is now and the way the master plan development agreement is spelled out, it's not requiring that buffer on the east side. So when we were discussing about ensuring that this remains a natural buffer in this area, I would make that a recommendation, you know, or a condition.
A condition? Okay, so what are the words?
So you would...
Would that satisfy you, Clint?
Depends on what the requirement is. I mean, there's two things that are bothering me. One is the pond, and one is the width of the buffer. And the owner has stated that he might consider changing the open space to buffer, or at least some of it. So specifically, what would that be? That's why I thought maybe he could bring that back. The MPD can, there's nothing wrong with it coming back. If you want to vote on it tonight, that's fine.
Well, you can put that in open space to be required for as well.
Well, if he can do that. I mean, the open space is a lot broader on here than just what I was thinking. But.
Well, I agree with you that I'd like to see more specific buffer language, whether it's greenbelt or open space or whatever you want to call it. But I know that when they do the final site plan, that's when this stuff actually gets cast in concrete.
But they're only we can only review it against what the requirement is in the MPD. So if this still says 100 feet, and they come back with 100 feet, pretty hard to deny them because they met the requirement. So I would rather see that, and if he's willing to do that, I would rather see that changed a little bit.
Go ahead, Mr. Tyner.
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to suggest that usually when you're in this position and you don't have the exact language that you want or that you can't get it at this point in time because you don't have all the information, typically you would move to continue, but this board has heard this matter twice, and perhaps it would be more appropriate at this point in time for the board to simply state that the board is the condition that the board would like to see added would be that the open space would be converted to buffer to the fullest extent practical and possible, and then allow the applicant to work with that and with the staff before the council meeting, because we don't even have a date for council yet, and that would give everybody time to work on that in light of the board's directive. So you could make a sort of a wish list, if you will, of what you want to see and direct that the applicant get with the staff before council meeting.
Okay.
And what I'm hearing, Mr. Chairman, is that this area that's open space, that in essence, I'll draw the line here, that all this here becomes buffer.
Natural buffer.
That's what I'm hearing.
It's not on the document. How can you prove that? You don't know if he's going to say that. Well, I'd rather have a continuance and come back again with him giving you the correct information.
Okay, so we need a motion saying...
Subject to the final plat.
Initial
plat and then final plat.
Yeah.
Condition of buffer space.
Say it out loud. What are you going to make the motion? If you're going to make it, say it out loud.
Go right ahead. Now, let me ask a question to Ray. If we do that, you're going to make that change before it goes to City Council?
Can, yes.
Okay. That would
That's
be
part of your recommendation.
So how about this?
Your recommendation?
I can't make a motion. The motion would say we move to set to approve this subject to the subsequent agreement between the developer and planning staff of an increase to the to a size as great as possible, the buffer on the north and the eastern side of the property.
The only problem there is if you refer back to what the actual buffer is, it's 25 feet.
No, it's 100 feet. It's right in the development order. It's 100 feet.
It's 100 feet in the development thing, but the actual one by code is 25 feet.
But it's we're approving this change. So right now it's 100 feet, but we're telling them that we expect that before the City Council meeting, that will be increased.
In the MPD agreement.
The MPD agreement.
To the fullest extent.
What's
possible.
The fullest extent? Possible. How much are we talking?
Okay. Move to approve.
Could you talk into the mic,
subject
please,
MPD.
So we can hear you?
Subject to the conditions outlined that the existing open space and portions of existing proposed water is left as native vegetation for buffer to the maximum extent feasible, subject to planning approval. Good enough?
I'll second the motion.
And, could I just clarify, subject to planning approval, you're talking about
the department.
The planning department
yes.
gets with the applicant on the...
Okay. We've got a motion and a second. And we know what we're voting on? Okay.
So.
I mean, you want it one more time? Okay. We'll move to approve the zoning map amendment change subject to the following change. To the extent possible, the buffer on the eastern and northern side of the property will be increased to include all the open space possible. Okay. Okay. Call the roll.
Thank you. Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Dolmy?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Four votes, yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
We're all this way, and is that a yes or a no?
That is being, it is the development order will be referred to the City Council for subsequent action.
So you guys
yes,
approve
they just took our property values away from us.
Yep.
We increased our taxes along with it.
And how long have you been their attorney? No attorney.
We're still having, Just a quick update. We still are working on the land development code, some more changes. We have part of our section with transportation, or Chapter 5, that we're looking at, and our sign code today that we met with Katie on. So as of with the landscape, this year we're going to see a lot of changes and a lot of workshops regarding our land development code. So just telling you, that's, you know, we are really working on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Bill's working on it, yes. Mm-hmm.
That's still there, yeah. It's still on the list, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we have a draft, yeah, that's on the list. With the minimum staff that we have, and, you know, I mean, development has picking up, so we are really trying to, you know, get a lot of this land development code this year. So I see, you know, the landscape is pretty darn tough and pretty darn technical. A lot of our codes probably not broken, yeah, okay, but some tweaks that we need to do. So the landscape really took a lot of time. So we'll see the other codes going a lot quicker. So just an update on that.
I do not. Thank you.
I put a motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
Second.
Favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.